31. Flynn made a strong comeback from the edge of death, so strong, in fact, that it aroused Rose's suspicions. However, she let it pass, for she was happy to have avoided the necessity of leaving Lalapanzi. In addition, there was another matter which was taking up a lot of her attention. Since she had said goodbye to Sebastian at the start of his tax tour, Rosa had been aware of the cessation of a certain womanly functions of her body. She consulted Nanny, who in turn consulted the local Nungage, who in his turn opened the belly of a chicken and consulted its entrails. His findings were conclusive, and Nanny reported back to Rosa without disclosing the source of her information, for little Longhair had an almost blasphemous lack of faith in the occult. Delighted, Rosa took Sebastian for a walk down the valley, and when they reached the waterfall where it had all begun, she stood on tiptoe, put both arms around his neck, and whispered in his ear. She had to repeat herself, for her voice was muffled with breathless laughter. "You're joking," gasped Sebastian, and then blushed bright crimson. "I'm not, you know." "Good grief," said Sebastian, and then groping for something more expressive. "Son of a gun." "Aren't you pleased?" Rosa pouted playfully. "I did it for you." "But we aren't even married." "That can be arranged." "And quickly, too," agreed Sebastian. He grabbed her wrist. "Come on. Sebastian, remember my condition. Oh, good grief, I'm sorry." He took her back to Lalapanzi, handing her over the rough ground with as much care as though she was a case of sweating gelignite. "What's the big hurry?" asked Flynn jovially at dinner that evening. "I've got a little job for Bessie first. I want him to slip across the river." "No, you don't," said Rosa. "We are going to see the priest at Baera. It would only take Bessie a couple of weeks, then we could talk about it when he gets back." "We are going to Baera tomorrow." "What's the rush?" Flynn asked again. "Well, the truth is, Flynn, old boy..." Wriggling in his chair, colouring up vividly, Sebastian relapsed into silence. "The truth is, I'm going to have a baby," Rosa finished for him.
"Your what?"
Flynn stared at her in horror.
"You said that you wanted to see your grandchild," Rosa pointed out.
"But I didn't mean you to start working on it right away," roared Flynn, and then he rounded on Sebastian. "You dirty young bugger!"
"Father, your heart," Rosa restrained him. "Anyway, don't pick on Sebastian. I did my share as well."
"You shameless, you brazen little..."
Rosa reached behind the seat cushion where Flynn had hidden the gin bottle. "Have a little of this. It will help calm you." They left for Baera the following morning. Rosa was carried in a mashil, with Sebastian trotting beside it in anxious attendance, ready to help ease the litter over the fords and rough places, and to curse any of the bearers who stumbled. When they left Lalapanzi, Flynn O'Flynn brought up the rear of the column, lying in his mashil, with a square-faced bottle for company, scowling and muttering darkly about fornication and sin. But both Rosa and Sebastian ignored him, and when they camped that night, the two of them sat across the campfire from him and whispered and laughed secretly together. They pitched their voices at such a tantalizing level that even by straining his ears, Flynn could not overhear their conversation. It infuriated him to such an extent that he finally made a loud remark about beating the hell out of the person who had repaid his hospitality by violating his daughter. Rosa said that she would give anything to see him try it again. In her opinion, it would be better than a visit to the circus. And Flynn gathered his dignity and his gin bottle and stalked away to where Muhammad had laid out his bedding under a lean-to of thorn bushes. During the dark hours before dawn, they were visited by an old lion. He came with a rush from the darkness beyond the firelight, grunting like an angry boar, the great black bush of his mane erect, snaking with incredible speed towards the huddle of blanket-wrapped figures about the fire. Flynn was the only one not asleep. He had waited all night, watching Sebastian's reclining figure, just waiting for him to move across to the temporary thornbush shelter that gave Rosa privacy. Lying beside Flynn was his shotgun, double-loaded with big loopers, lion shot, and he had every intention of using it. When the lion charged into the camp, Flynn sat up quickly and fired both barrels of the shotgun at point-blank range into the man-eater's head and chest, killing it instantly. But the momentum of its rush bowled it forward, sent it sliding full into Sebastian, and both of them rolled into the campfire. Sebastian awoke to lion noises and gunfire, and the violent collision of a big body into his, and red-hot coals sticking to various parts of his anatomy. With a single bound and a wild cry, he threw off his blanket, came to his feet, and went into such a lively song and dance routine, yodeling and high-kicking and striking out at his imaginary assailants, that Flynn was reduced to a jelly of helpless laughter. The laughter and the praise and thanks showered on him by Sebastian, Rosa, and the bearers cleared the air. "You've saved my life," said Sebastian, soulfully. "Oh, Daddy, you're wonderful," said Rosa. "Thank you, thank you." And she hugged him. The mantle of the hero felt snug and comfortable on Flynn's shoulders. He became almost human, and the improvement continued as each day's march brought them closer to the little Portuguese port of Beira, for Flynn greatly enjoyed his rare visits to civilization. And the last night they camped a mile from the outskirts of the town, and after a private conference with Flynn, old Mohammed went ahead, armed with a small purse of escudos, to make the arrangements for Flynn's formal entry on the morrow. Flynn was up with the dawn, and while he shaved with care and dressed in clean moleskin jacket and trousers, one of the bearers began polishing his boots with hippo fat, and two others scaled the tall bottle palm tree near the camp and cut fronds from its head. All things being ready, Flynn ascended his mashil and lay back elegantly on the leopard-skin rugs. On each side of Flynn, a bearer took his position, armed with a palm frond, and began to fan him gently. Behind Flynn, in single file, followed other servants bearing tusks of ivory and the still-green lion-skin. Behind this, with instructions from Flynn not to draw undue attention to themselves, followed Sebastian and Rosa and the baggage-bearers. With a languid gesture, such as might have been used by Nero to signal the start of a Roman circus, Flynn gave the order to move. Along the rough road, through the thick coastal bush, they came at last to Beira and entered the main street in procession. "Good Lord!" Sebastian expressed his surprise when he saw the reception that awaited them. "Where did they all come from?" Both sides of the street were lined with cheering crowds, mainly natives, but with here and there a Portuguese or an Indian trader come out of his shop to find the cause of the disturbance.
"Fini!" chanted the crowd, clapping their hands in unison. "Buona Mucuba! Great Lord, slayer of elephant, killer of lions."
I didn't realize that Flynn was so well regarded. Sebastian was impressed. "Most of them have never heard of him," Rosa disillusioned him. "He sent Mohammed in last night to gather a claque of about 100 or so, pay them one escudo each to come and cheer. They make so much noise that the entire population turns out to see what is going on. They fall for it every time. What on earth does he go to so much trouble for?" "Because he enjoys it. Just look at him." lying in his machine, graciously acknowledging the applause. Flynn was very obviously loving every minute of it. The head of the procession reached the only hotel in Baeira and halted. Madame de Souza, the portly, well-moustached widow who was the proprietress of the hotel, rushed down to welcome Flynn with a smacking kiss and ushered him ceremoniously through the shabby portals. Flynn was the kind of customer she had always dreamed about. When Rosa and Sebastian at last fought their way through the crowd into the hotel, Flynn was already seated at the bar counter and halfway through a tall glass of Laurentia beer. The man, sitting on the stool beside him, was the governor of Mozambique's aide-de-camp, who had come to deliver His Excellency's invitation for Flynn O'Flynn to dine at Government House that evening. It was settlement day in the partnership of Flynn O'Flynn and others. His Excellency, José de Clara d'Anfelzaro del Silva Marquez, had received from Governor Shea in Dar es Salaam an agitated report in the form of an official protest and an extradition demand of the success of the partnership's operations during the final months, and His Excellency was delighted to see Flynn. In fact, so pleased was His Excellency with the progress of the partnership's affairs that he exercised his authority to waive the formalities required by law to proceed a marriage under Portuguese jurisdiction. This saved a week, and the afternoon after their arrival in Beira, Rosa and Sebastian stood before the altar in the stucco and thatch cathedral, while Sebastian tried, with little success, to remember enough of his schoolroom Latin to understand just what he was getting himself into. The wedding veil, which had belonged to Rosa's mother, was yellowed by many years of storage under tropical conditions, but it served well enough to keep off the flies, which were always bad during the hot season in Beira. Towards the end of the long ceremony, Flynn was so overcome by the heat, the gin he had taken at lunch, and an unusually fine flood of Irish feeling that he began snuffling loudly. When he mopped at his eyes and nose with a grubby handkerchief, the governor's aide-de-camp patted his shoulder soothingly and murmured encouragement. The priest declared them husband and wife, and the congregation launched into a faltering rendition of the Te Deum. His voice, quivering with emotion and alcohol, Flynn kept repeating, "My little girl, my poor little girl." Rosa lifted her veil and turned to Sebastian, who immediately forgot his misgivings as to the form of the ceremony, and enfolded her enthusiastically in his arms. Still maintaining his chorus of, "My little girl," Flynn was led away by the aide-de-camp to the hotel where the proprietress had prepared the wedding feast. In deference to Flynn O'Flynn's mood, this started out on a sombre note, but as the champagne, which Madame de Souza had specially bottled the previous evening, started to do its work, so the tempo changed. Among his other actions, Flynn gave Sebastian a wedding present of £10 and poured a full glass of beer over the aide-de-camp's head. When, later that evening, Rosa and Sebastian slipped away to the bridal suite above the bar, Flynn was giving lusty tongue to the chorus of "They are jolly good fellows." Madame de Souza was seated on his lap and overflowing it in all directions. Every time Flynn pinched her posterior, great gusts of laughter made her shake like a stranded jellyfish. Later, the pleasure of Rosa's and Sebastian's wedding bed was disturbed by the fact that in the barroom directly below them, Flynn O'Flynn was shooting the bottles off the shelves with a double-barreled elephant rifle. Every direct hit was greeted by thunderous applause from the other guests. Madame de Souza, still palpitating with laughter, sat in a corner of the barroom, dutifully making such entries in her notebook as 1 bottle of Grandio London Dry Gin, 14.5 escudos, 1 bottle Grandio French Cognac 5 Star, 14½ escudos. 1 bottle Grandio Scotch whisky, 30 escudos. 1 Magnum Grandio French Champagne, 75.9 escudos. Grandio was the brand name of the house, and signified that the liquor each bottle contained had been brewed and bottled on the premises under the personal supervision of Madame de Souza. Once the newlywed couple realized that the uproar from the room below was sufficient to mock the protests of their rickety brass bedstead, they no longer grudged Flynn his amusements. For everyone involved, it was a night of great pleasure, a night to be looked back upon with nostalgia and wistful smiles.